Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Welcome, everyone. Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast, our year in review 2023. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Hopefully, you guys had a wonderful, happy, healthy, and safe holiday season. And we're getting ready now for 2024. Hard to believe it'll be here. Just around the corner, taping this part on Friday the 29th, and this will go live then, but obviously you can listen whenever you want. Many of you, I'm sure, will listen in 2024. Blue Claws open on April the 5th against the Aberdeen Ironbirds. If you're listening before Monday, so Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Blue Claws will have a special for opening night tickets for just $20.24 offer to a ring in 2024. We'll look back at 2023, though, in this episode of Hook, Line, and Splitter. And we're going to hear from several different Blue Claws players, eight of them. We took some of the best clips, or we thought were the best clips from those interviews, put them all together, but we encourage you to go back and listen to all those old episodes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or just blueclaws.com/podcast. Please like, rate, review, and subscribe to Hook, Line, and Splitter, and help us spread the good word as we head into 2024. You're going to hear from the following players: Orion Kirkering, Christian McGowan, Gunnar Mayer, Nick Ward, Mitch Noonborn, Trevor May, Otto Kemp, and Andrew Walling. All but Trevor May played for the Blue Claws in 2023. Of course, Trevor played for the Blue Claws back in 2009 and 2010. So, Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 84. It's our 2023 year in review. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a wonderful holiday season, and enjoy Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 84, our 2023 year in review. We'll start with Orion Kirkering, who of course had a meteoric rise through the system. He began the year with low A Clearwater, came to the Blue Claws in early May, left the Blue Claws on July 6th to go to Double A Reading, and then was in Double A for a couple of months. One game in Lehigh in September, and then he's in the big leagues by the end of September and on the Phillies playoff roster. Matt Gelb from The Athletic did some research, and Jose Contreras, who came over from Cuba a number of years ago, was the only player since High A began in 1991, I believe, that pitched in low A, high A, double A, and triple A, and the big leagues in the same year, along with Kirkering. So a pretty incredible season that he had. And we start with Orion. This is back in the summer, episode 67. And he talked about his nasty slider, which was his go-to pitch. And then he'll talk more about pitching at USF, how he ended up there, and his journey into the Phillies system. But this is obviously long before he made a big league appearance. He was still in high A with Jersey Shore. But we start with his slider. Here's Orion Kirkering from episode 67.
It's for sure my go-to pitch. I think in college ball, I think my last season, I think I threw about at least like 55%. I think I threw it more times than my fastball. So just kind of, I trust it a lot. I know where it's going, and I can just have a good feel for it. So like Jackson Holliday got 3-0 behind him, and just threw two back in there to get me back in the count. So it's not like I'm afraid to throw it. So I'm always ready to go for it. Especially this year, it's been a lot better velocity wise, because it's always had the same shape for the most part. But just adding that extra few miles an hour to that pitch from maybe 83 to 86, now it's sitting 86 to, I think it maybe topped like 89.6 or something like that this year so far. So that's definitely helped me a lot.
Yeah. And then, you know, it has a late movement. So it's coming in, you know, 10 miles an hour slower than the fastball. Late, sharp movement. So difficult. Do you find it's more effective against right-handers breaking away, or Holliday is a left-handed hitter breaking in?
You know, it's kind of tough right now, especially seeing the high A, because it's always like they have a lot better eyes, so I can't always tell for the most part, because it's like sometimes it's like, oh, I don't know if that was just a good eye or he just got fooled at some points. So, but that just goes back into like how we talked about the scouting report aspect of it. It's like, I don't know if they took it because they're like, oh, that was down, or I got fooled and I couldn't swing at that. Because there was a couple times where like, Wagner for Aberdeen, the first hitter I faced, I threw two sliders, didn't swing at one, And then so I could throw off the zone, and he's like, I just got fooled, but I didn't swing at it. So it's just kind of like those aspects of it, just kind of learning. But I'd definitely say, like, this year, looking at, like, all the numbers aspects of it, I think to a lefty has been a lot better this year than in the past, for at least me personally. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, that's a big thing, too, moving forward. So, you know, we've had guys – I mean, Blue Claws were low A for a while and then switch up to high A in 2021. So, you know, we've had guys that would pitch for the Blue Claws, go up to high A, and you'd see them just – walk a lot more guys. I remember Trevor May did that, and then he came back in he went low A for a year, high A for half a year, and then came back, and he had walked a lot more guys in high A, and it was because the guys were more selective. And you know, he was kind of like, you know, hard throwing, you know, power right hander, and they stopped chasing it, and it was an adjustment for him, and he made the adjustment, and then he went on to have a really good big league career. So, you know, for you, I know you've only been in high A for, you know, 2.5-3 weeks now. Is it noticeable for you looking at the, you know, when you face these high A hitters that are probably on average a year and a half to two, maybe even 2.5 years older than a lot of the low A guys? Is it noticeable for you that they chase a lot less?
I would say so. Yeah, I definitely have a lot more discipline when they come up to the plate still. I mean, there's always guys who always chase at every level. It doesn't matter. Even big leagues, there's Javier Baez swinging the ball is about 50 feet in front of him. So you just never know what's going to happen. So, you, like I said earlier, you just have to kind of set them up that way into it because they were just swinging at everything. But here, like I said, you just got to set them up and just understand who they are as a ball player, beat them that way.
You're from Venice, Florida, which is a little bit south of the Clearwater, Tampa area. USF is in Tampa, right that far from Clearwater, of course. So, you know, was it easy decision for you to kind of stay home-ish? Where else were you thinking about – where else were you looking when coming out of high school?
In staying Clearwater, you mean?
No, when you were coming out of high school, you went to USF, which is not that far from where you grew up. Where else were you looking?
I was getting talks with like Florida, Ole Miss, Stetson, mainly Stetson for the most part, because it was just super like close to home and like understand the coaching staff. But the reason why I went to USF was because I was so close. Not so much I was so close, because I feel like that wasn't a huge factor to me. It was just more the fact of the coaching staff with Coach Mull there and understanding of who he was as a pitching coach and being able to trust him, because it's kind of, to me, I felt more importance of I want to work on myself than maybe if I did go to Arkansas, for example, even though I wasn't being looked at them. But like, you go to Arkansas, all these SEC schools, it's like, how hard is it to become a freshman and play and get earning moments versus just going in there once a 21 game, just get your innings just because. So he almost promised me, like, as a freshman here, you're going to get some opportunities. It's not you're just going to sit the bench all year. You're going to get some opportunities to succeed and fail at the same time, understand the process through the whole season. I think that's what really turned me around to go there. And his aspect of pitching was, like, I have a system where I've gotten guys to the big leagues, because I think since he's been there, I think there's been at least, like, 16-plus pitchers that I got drafted or at least free agent signings to go play for big leagues.
Christian McGowan had a tremendous year as well. He's episode 83, rehabbing from Tommy John surgery. And he came back with the Blue Claws in August, made a couple of starts with Jersey Shore, pitched a great game in the first Blue Claws playoff game, which they won on the Caleb Ricketts 2-run home run. So McGowan talked about his start in the with the Blue Claws in the postseason, and then some about it. And then about some of the influences he's had throughout his journey in the Phillies minor league system. Remember, he came up to Jersey Shore in 2022, but got hurt and had Tommy John surgery after just two starts with the Blue Claws last year. So he had a big comeback this year, and he's certainly a name to watch heading into 2024. From episode 83, here's Christian McGowan.
You know, it's just building up consistency. I would say it was the biggest thing. Because that's when I started turning around a little bit, about 4 to 5 starts. And so as long as the atmosphere was good with the guys, you know, when you're doing good, they're going to do good. Because if I'm out there pitching innings, it's just going to get them guys in to hit the ball. And so it makes you look good when they're putting up runs. But when they're not putting up runs, it doesn't. So, like, it kind of plays a little bit on either side. But, yeah, it was a great game. I delivered some good pitches, got some good outs against a team that kind of hit me the first time. And so I was definitely excited to go into that. And then I knew if we made playoffs, we'd face them again. So I knew it was going to be right back at them.
What did it mean for you to get one game in, and what'd you learn from your game in AAA?
man, AAA was fun. I liked it a lot. It was a lot of older guys that tested me. But I like to test, you know, I like it being competitive. You know, you hear guys that play up to their level and they play down to other levels. And I felt like, you know, the consistency of the fastball wasn't there. They had major league balls up there. So there was a little bit of difference than when I was throwing the baseball. And so it was coming off a little different, of course, but it was fun. You know, those guys, you know, you have the ABS system up there and those guys know it really well. And you just one call away from the majors. And so, of course, you're going to play guys that are really talented and really good, but, you know, you test yourself. At the end of the day, it's going to show your result of where you stand. And if you need to keep going, keep going. You know what I mean? It's just a matter of fact of getting back in there. And, you know, it's no bigger game than a high A game or double A game, I would say. They're all the same. You're all playing good guys. It's just the end of the day, how good are you going to keep going?
What's the biggest difference with the baseballs?
The baseballs were tighter in AAA. Like, the seams were tighter. The baseball was a little slicker, it felt like to me. But it was just a tighter baseball. The whole thing around the seams were just inconsistent. Sometimes you get a seams that were, you know, higher up, and sometimes you get seams that are lower. It just depend on, you know, in and out. It was just very inconsistent, and it was kind of hard to stimulate the same pitch.
You mentioned ABS, that's automatic balls and strikes. Did they also use that in Arizona?
Yes. On some occasions, on some fields, there was the Salt River field they did.
Do you like that as a pitcher?
I mean, it depends. You know, you got that spot that the hitter takes and then the seam hits it. You know what I mean? But at the end all be all, I like the human nature of human error. You know, if people are going to make mistakes, umpires are going to make mistakes, you know, we're going to make mistakes in the field and off the field. And so I kind of like it just because it brings a little bit more intensity to it. You know what I mean? You challenge a call and no one can really say anything. And so it creates a little more momentum when things are, you know, getting a little heated, and it creates bigger moments, and it's a lot more fun that way.
I don't love the pitch by pitch of the ABS, but I do like the challenge system. I think that's pretty cool, and it should correct all the major, you know, any major errors. And you the players have to make that call like pretty instantaneously, right? Like no relying on the dugout, none of that.
For sure. Yeah, I know it's top of the head if you think it's a strike.
Yeah. So what did you learn in Arizona? You're playing against over the consistent group of players, you know, the best group of players that you probably had ever faced. What did you learn about yourself as you wrapped up the full season or the half season?
Yeah, so what I learned most is I can throw the four seam up in accounts that I'm usually just a sinker guy. But when I started throwing the fastball up in counts that people haven't seen it, then it created something of a different eye level. And so I was super excited about that because those guys, you know, they're really good down there and they can put the barrel on the ball. And so if there's something I can change an eye level off to keep them inconsistent of getting a hit, then it's something I need to do. And if it's something to get a double play ball, it's something I need to do. And so just playing those guys was a lot of fun down there. I met some cool guys from different orgs, and I really enjoyed it a lot.
What would you say is your best pitch?
Best pitch? Two-seam fastball.
How long have was that something you'd always thrown even before the Phillies?
Yeah, I've thrown it in college all my life, and it was just a fastball that I can run in on the hands. If a runner gets on first, I know I'm always set for a ground ball for a double play to get out of it.
And then what's your best off-speed pitch?
Probably slider.
How is
slider down?
How has that pitch developed for you since coming into the system?
Man, it's developed a lot, especially me just trusting it more. There's times I do, as every pitcher doesn't get through it, and so they leave it up and it gets smacked. But with my arm, like, if I just stay true and, you know, like I said, I have that mental thing of like, okay, I'm healthy. Like, you can grip it and yank it, you know what I mean? Then it's really good and it's really at its best to do what it needs to do.
Do you go over a lot of the analytical stuff with the coaches? Spin, velocity, arm slot, all that stuff?
Here or there.
Yeah.
No, I'm more of a feel guy. I truly believe you can get mixed up in numbers. I do believe it's a really good tool to use. But at the same time, when base is loaded, are you really thinking about numbers? Are you really thinking about getting that guy out? And what's your best pitch to get him out? And so it's just getting the ball over the plate, because it's still hard. You know, if you watch BP, guys are still hitting it up in the air. Guys are still, you know, not barreling up in BP when they're throwing it right over the middle. So more consistency, just throwing strikes. And I'm putting the ball over in the middle of the plate and just seeing what can happen. Usually you'll come out pretty positive.
I know you're only here for 6 weeks this year, but what did you learn from Phil and Brady, and how did they, you know, kind of play off of each other? Phil being, you know, the older veteran, and Brady, you know, who was playing a year prior to moving into the coaching side.
Yeah, I think it was a great pair. Those guys fed off each other really good. Of course, Phil, he was awesome. And, you know, then you hear stuff from, you know, what Brady's done, and you talk to him and you get feedback from what he thinks. And then they kind of, you know, compromise on what I need to do. And, you know, they had really good feel for me coming off an injury and understanding situations of where I needed to be in pitch counts to inning to all other kind of stuff. And so I thought they did a heck of a job, and it was a nice plan for them.
One of the cooler stories, I think, was Gunnar Mayer's episode 64. And Gunnar joined us back in the spring and talked about in this clip how he did not start pitching until the summer after his junior year in high school. And he did 1 year as a starter in high school, 1 year at a JUCO, and then was drafted by the Phillies in 2019. And then, you know, a guy like him, of course, the COVID year, because he had so little experience, just needed more reps, really hurt him probably more than most people. So he's still on the ascension, and you know, he pitched pretty well at times for Jersey Shore this past season. I wouldn't be shocked if he's back with the Blue Claws at the beginning of 2024, but certainly a really talented young man, really nice kid too, and enjoyed talking with Gunnar. So again, this clip from episode 64, he didn't start pitching until the summer after his junior year of high school.
In high school, I started pitching like my junior, senior summer in summer ball. And I was throwing like mid to high 80s probably. But I mean, that was my first year of like actually pitching. So I was like, oh, maybe pitching is the route I should take. So kept pitching through junior college, played a little bit of defense still at first base. But like middle of the year is when I shut that down a little bit and then just started pitching and focusing on that, because I knew that was probably my best chance of going pro.
How did you end up pitching in the first place?
It was at my high school, and the pitching coach wanted me to throw a bullpen. Just, he was like, throw a bullpen. Like, you're tall. You don't pitch. I don't know why.
You got a good arm.
So I threw a bullpen. It was like mid to high 80s. I wasn't anywhere near the zone, but, he liked what he saw. So he kept going. So
that was what, sophomore year?
That was my junior year of high school.
So you start the season junior year of high school. And then, you know, how many games did you get into as a pitcher?
Probably like 10, if that. And they were closing innings, so I would have like one inning at a time.
So you pitched 10, 12 innings, whatever, in high school, as a junior in high school. And then 2 years later, you're pitching in junior college. And then at 18, you get drafted. So that's pretty strange. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was awesome. Yeah.
What was it like when how are you following the draft?
How was I following the draft?
Yeah, were you watching it? Were you home?
Yeah, we were watching it. It was the second day of the draft, and it was early in the morning. I don't think it's like televised this part, so we had it connected to the computer, but we had it on the TV. So we had not a big party, but we just had some family over and stuff like that. But it was good.
What was it like when you heard your name? Or how did you did you hear your name from did the Phillies call you first? Did Joey call you first? Or did you hear it on
the screen?
I heard
it first on the screen. I mean, I got texts kind of about saying, be ready, like you might hear your name. So I was watching the TV and we heard my name on the TV and it was super surreal. Gave my parents a big hug and felt pretty happy about it.
How quickly did you sign?
There wasn't really a question that I wouldn't sign. I got drafted, saw what it was for, and then I signed the paper.
And then how quickly were you in Clearwater? Or did you go to Philly first or whatever?
I went to Philly first. It was, I think I had like 4 days at home after I got drafted, and they shipped me off.
Moving on to episode 61. This was one of the first ones we did since the season started. Nick Ward, who apparently, according to my man Steve Potter, PhilliesBaseballFan.com, is going to sign with the Atlanta Braves, or has signed with the Atlanta Braves as a minor league free agent. But Nick came up immediately, was one of the Blue Claws' best players for the first half. He ended up getting promoted to Double-A in the summer, in August. But he had an incredible baseball journey. He was drafted by the Oakland A's, but cut during the COVID year, played 2 years in independent baseball in the Frontier League, and then played for Team Great Britain in the World Baseball Classic qualifiers. This is the fall of 2022. And then went to Adelaide to play for the Adelaide Giants in the Australian Baseball League, where he was one of the best players in the league last year. From there, signed with the Phillies, played for Team Great Britain in the actual World Baseball Classic last March. Back to Florida for spring training, up to the Blue Claws, and he grew up a huge Phillies fan outside of Philadelphia. So just an amazing story. He's a great, great young man, and we wish him well with the Braves. But here is Nick Ward talking about his experience with Team Great Britain in the World Baseball Classic.
First of all, getting to play for a country, let alone just any team, it meant that much more, right? So getting to play baseball, and professionally anyways, is always a blessing, but then getting to do it and represent where your family's from was also like, that was really, really, really special to begin with. And then getting to play against a glorified Major League Baseball All-Star team, right? It almost didn't feel real. Like the first couple innings of that first game, I should probably say the first inning of that game, it felt like I was dreaming, because there was 40,000 plus people in the stands, and I'm playing against guys that I've idolized for years, and I'm playing first base that day, so I'm getting to talk to all of them, so it was surreal, if I could just use one word.
Who were some of the players that made it to you there at first?
I think every single person in that lineup made it to first base. So, I mean, I'd already gotten a chance to talk to JT Realmuto and Kyle Schwarber quite a bit in spring training. But I got a chance to talk to Kyle Tucker and Paul Goldschmidt. And I'm a big Eagles fan, so I made sure I told Mike Trout, go Birds. I talked to Mookie Betts a little bit too. But yeah, every single person was great.
When did the WBC option become available to you? When did you start talking to the baseball Great Britain folks?
Yeah, so it was summer of 2021, I believe. So I had one of my friends, the last WBC qualifier was spring of 2020, but it got canceled because of COVID. And one of my friends was playing for Team Brazil, and I just asked him about like what that experience was like, and he told me, Nick, if you ever get a chance to do something like that, you have to do it. Like it's a no-brainer. You have to do it. So I was thinking, like, looked up the rules for qualifications, and knowing that my mom was born in England, I was like, well, let's see if England or Great Britain has a baseball team. So did a little bit of research, found out that there was a Great Britain men's national team, and just sent an email to the British Baseball Federation, like, explaining who I was, and that my mom was born there, my grandparents were born and raised there, and I still qualify for British citizenship, so I would be able to play for the team, and just wondering if they had had any room or interest in bringing me onto the team. And within 24 hours, I had gotten an email back from our manager, Drew Spencer, asking when I could, like, hop on a phone call with them. And I hopped on a phone call with him the next day. And then I was on, like, the preliminary roster for the qualifier. And then, I had to get, like, my British passport sorted, and it was a whole mess of things. But it was probably, a couple years ago, 2021.
So your first experience playing for them was in the qualifiers last fall, correct? Fall of 22?
That's correct.
So where'd you play? And it was in Europe somewhere, right? And how many teams mm-hmm. made it? And what was it like when you guys finally broke through and officially qualified?
So it was in Regensburg, Germany. So I was in the Frontier League playoffs in that fall. And if we had won our game, then if we'd won the series, I would not have been able to go to Germany. But there was somebody who had made the initial 25 or 28 man roster, whatever it was, had gotten hurt. So they added me to the roster as soon as we lost. So we lost on a Sunday. I packed up all my stuff and drove home on a Monday and flew to Germany on Tuesday.
Wow.
And then, so from there, it was, so Germany was obviously the host nation of that qualifier. And then there was Great Britain, Spain, France, and South Africa in our little qualifying pool. So, and two teams, actually, there's a Czech Republic. Did I say Czech Republic? Yeah.
And South Africa, yeah, Czech Republic and South Africa.
Yeah, okay. I couldn't remember if I said them. So two teams from each qualifying pool advance to the actual World Baseball Classic. So we ended up winning the whole qualifier. We won on a walk-off against Spain in the third game.
10-9.
And it was 10-9, yeah. It was like, that was one of the craziest games I've ever been a part of.
And look, you guys were down 9 to – looks like you were down 9-6. Scored mm-hmm. two in the 7th, one in the 9th, and then one in the 10th.
Yeah, so one of our teammates who was a high school draft pick by the Toronto Blue Jays. I think he's 20 or 21 years old now. But at the time, he was 20, and he one run in the ninth inning, the bottom of the ninth inning, he hit a home run to tie the game. And
Jaden Rudd.
Yeah. So whenever he did that, like, I had no doubt in my mind that we were winning that game. That was, like, as soon as he did that, that was one of the coolest moments I have ever been a part of on a baseball field.
Mitch Noonborn, another one who played in the WBC. Mitch joined us in episode 72. He had a tremendous season with Jersey Shore. Had been in a couple of big league camps around the COVID time, and then pitched in Adelaide for a couple of years, was on Team Australia in the World Baseball Classic. He was actually born in Johannesburg, South Africa, but moved to Australia when he was 3. And Phillies were looking at him, and he ended up pitching very well in the WBC. And came over and pitched with the Blue Claws, and he started as a reliever and worked his way up into a starting role and pitched, in fact, so well that he went to the World Baseball Classic. Went to the Arizona Fall League. So he pitched in the WBC and the AFL this year, plus some very good innings with Jersey Shore. He throws a Vulcan split changeup that is his go-to pitch. And he was our guest in episode 72. And Mitch talked about his time in Australia, joining the Blue Claws in a group that included several of his Adelaide and his Australian teammates.
Yeah, no, it's... No, it's amazing. It makes it very, very easy to kind of come into a new team and fit right in right away. So it made it easy to break down some doors that with some other people I didn't really know, just for those people that I did have some contact with already. It makes a huge difference, and I love my everyone involved. So tell us how did you know
Travis? How'd you end up with his team in Iowa?
We had some other Australians go through NIAC, Northern Iowa area, before I did. And a couple of my buddies that I grew up with actually went to NIAC. We had about six Australians the year I went. So Travis has always kind of looked into the Australian scouting, which is kind of cool, especially back then. College was a pretty big decision for a lot of us. So it was cool to be able to go experience that and get that ticked off. So no, Travis was a big role in all of that.
So when you came over, how did they kind of integrate you into their way of doing things?
It's been pretty easy to integrate. Tank's been preaching a lot of things we've been talking about with the Phillies since I've been here in the past couple of months. Dominating controllables has been something that Tank has been instilling in us for a couple of years here in Adelaide. So it was very easy transition to kind of go, because we've been preaching the same things back home for a while. So
let's talk about Adelaide. So I know you were born in South Africa, grew up in Perth. We'll come back to that. How did you end up with Adelaide and Tank a couple of years back?
So I played for Perth my first year in the ABL, and COVID kind of hit just after my first year. So I decided trying to travel Australia while I couldn't travel outside of the country. Just try something new, and I really enjoyed the experience playing with a lot of young dudes. I've been in Adelaide for 3 years now. I'm planning on going back. So, it's been amazing. And now it's kind of my home now, so I enjoy it there a lot.
I know. So Tank was here in 2021, and he was pretty excited going into that winter, the 21-22 Adelaide season, that you guys had a really good team, and then COVID kind of wiped out most of that year. Going into 2022-2023, the season that ended in February, did you guys think, did you know you had a pretty good chance of winning the whole thing? What was that season like?
Yeah, it was the COVID year was interesting. We had a lot of young dudes from Adelaide be able to come up and give the ABL a go. A lot of guys wanted to go to college, which was cool to see the younger kids get a shot and really kind of prove themselves, which was amazing. But Adelaide's got such a great culture and a core group of Aussies that every year it's not relying on other imports and stuff like that. So we've got a good bunch of Aussies. So the culture's always the same. And we always feel like we have a chance winning any game of baseball, and then trying to just string it together and put a whole season through was kind of the main goal. And we always knew we believed we could do it, which was the main thing. We just had to prove it and put it together.
And how many guys that were on the Perth team that you beat in the final had you played with?
Man, every single one of them. Every single one of them. So Tim Kennelly, who was the captain of Australia.
Who played for the Blue Claws. Did you know he played for the Blue Claws? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I actually grew up with – I was Tim's bat boy when I was 12. My first ever baseball game was with his brother Sam. And then I played with him when I was 15 years old. I played short. He played third. So I grew up playing club ball against him. And then all the dudes my age I played on teams with growing up. Every single one of them I know very, very well.
So you play against them, and then a few of them are obviously on Team Australia, including Kennelly – a month later. So take us through the WBC thing. Did you know you were going to be on a team? Did you know, when did they tell you that you had made the team and all that stuff?
The team came out a couple months prior. You've always got an idea, but you never really understand or yeah. It's never really cemented your role. But no, WBC was one of the best experiences of my life. It was representing your country is always something super, super special, and especially the culture that Australia puts together in baseball, trying to prove to the rest of the world that we can compete at the top of the top level. And it's something that I'll always cherish for sure.
So the first game you guys played Korea, and I talked about this with Tank before, and you know, going in, we're looking at it from back here, and you're like, well, I know you guys are probably better than the Czechs and China. Japan is really good. They're going to be tough. And then that leaves two teams for the last spot, you and Korea. Now, as it turned out, you played them the first game. So if you don't beat them, it's going to be super tough. You're going to need help, you know, to pass them. So, you know, back here in the States, a couple of us were talking and saying, all right, well, today's the game, you know, today's the day. It's the first game of the tournament. You're going to play four games, but this is a big one. Did you guys kind of look at it that way too?
Oh yeah, yeah, no, 100%. We always always focused just on what was ahead of us. So you can't worry about any other game except game one, right? You got to get through game one and then get through game two. But yeah, that game was amazing. The boys did an amazing job, battled out bad. It was kind of surreal to be a part of. You leave that experience, you know, you get back and you actually realize what just happened and let it sink in. It's pretty cool.
So you guys made the quarterfinals. That's a tough game. To Cuba. You Rexon hit a home run to bring you back in the game there in the sixth inning, and you just kind of fell one run short. How long did it take to get over the disappointment of getting eliminated and to really appreciate everything that you guys had accomplished with Australia's deepest run?
I think it took a while to get over the loss necessarily. We were in that ball game. I don't feel like we were necessarily beat personally. But that was just, you know, that's the beauty of baseball. It's and any day anyone can kind of take away with the W. So it definitely took a little bit, but I think all the messages and that our whole team got bombarded with congratulations and everyone back in Australia being super proud of what we have accomplished. It was a massive proud moment for everyone, and it took us a little while to, you know, get over the loss, but we got there.
Next up, Trevor May, who joined us for episode 81 at the end of his big league baseball career. Trevor was a Blue Claw back in 2009 and 2010 and helped the Blue Claws win two South Atlantic League titles. And we talked about his baseball journey in his episode, again, episode 81. He was really cool. He's a very well-spoken young man. He has a lot of interests both inside and outside of the game, and you'll definitely hear from him now that he started his retirement from baseball, but he'll certainly be in the public sphere, I think, doing a variety of things over the next couple of years. And we talked with Trevor first in this clip here. Why did he retire now? And then into some of his favorite memories with the Blue Claws from those 2 years, 2009 and 2010.
I just thought it was as good a time as any. It's been something I've been thinking about quite often for like the last year or two, just kind of everything that comes along with playing the game and the time commitment and the, you know, having to be traveling constantly and you know, like it just takes a big toll on your family. It takes a big toll on your partner. It takes a big toll on your parents. Like, and my parents getting older, it's just a lot of things. And I really love where I live, and I love the Northwest, and I haven't got to spend much time up here. And you know, as long as I can remember, I've always looked forward to, you know, spending my falls and my winters up here. It's never been a lot of guys would say, like, are you ready for the season to start because you're bored? I'm like, no. Like, it's never because I'm bored. I'm always really enjoying what I'm doing. And that's a blessing and a curse in a lot of ways, because dropping the things that you're working on sucks sometimes. But I'm also like, once I got in the swing of things, like, I really love playing. So I'm going to miss playing. But I think that the best way for me to put it, I've been asked the question a lot, as you can imagine, recently. It's just like, I wanted to. I just wanted to do some other stuff. And you know, how I played and how, you know, whether or not I could continue to play didn't really factor in as much as wanting to.
When you got to the ballpark there on October 1st, I think Sunday, October 1st, did you know that that was it? Had you already made that decision?
I had. I actually knew. So the thing that was kind of going on behind the scenes is I had an incentive written in my contract that I had no intention of getting, especially after how going on the IL for that month, I was like, there's no shot. And then it turns out that I was really, really close to being able to get it at the end. I had to finish games, and I had only been finishing games. Like I had like 20 straight games where I finished the game. So I was like, oh, I might actually get this thing. And on the 30th of September, I got the incentive. In a situation, it was a safe situation. We had to go hit a homer to get a 4-run lead, but in Anaheim, and I knew that was probably the last I was pitching. So I went out there. You know, if you watch it back, I go out there and I like take the whole stadium in. After you know, Shea Langeliers behind the plate knew, he had known all year. He's funny. We've had a funny back and forth on the plane every time. He's like, "You're coming back for another year. Like, you're coming." That was, he's like, because he's, you know, a rookie, and we really enjoyed playing together. And he, like, the hug was a little longer. Pointed up into the crowd for the first time because my wife Kate was there. He knew. We kind of quietly had it be a celebration. I knew. And there was some, it was bittersweet for sure.
So, yeah, 2 years with the Blue Claw, I guess kind of two half seasons with the Blue Claw, second half of 09, and then second half of 10. Looking back now, what do you remember most about those 2 years? Obviously, you get to win two championships, which is pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. You know, I had a lot of really great teammates on those teams. A lot of guys who made it to the league and are continuing, like Travis Darnot, still up doing it. You know, we had a bunch of guys that were drafted with me too. So like, that was kind of my first meaningful baseball as a pro. I'll be honest, in 08, I also won the GCL championship, but like, I also showed up way late for that. I was like I only pitched like three or four times. So I wasn't like I didn't even pitch in the playoffs. Like I was shut down. So I was just there watching, but these ones, like I was part of it. I was like the game one starter and the first one as a 19-year-old, which was really cool. Like, it's just all those, like you learn how to be, those were my first couple of years, like being like, oh, like I'm pretty good. Like I'm pretty good. Like you show up when you're drafted and everyone's like you, everyone throws as hard as you, everyone's 6'5". Everyone was big. I was drafted with like the whole draft class in 08 was 6'5". Everybody, all righty pitchers.
Yep. Pettibone, and, Brody Colvin.
Pettibone.
Yeah.
Colvin, Knapp.
Jared like, Cosart, was he in your class? Yeah, I think
Cosart was a year after me. He was a year after me in 09. But Colvin was 09 as well. But like they, you know, these guys were, there's always a crop of righties. So like, you look around, you're like, oh, I got to find a way to like separate myself. And then I had the good, it was extended spring training, which wasn't ideal. You don't want that. And then I got to go to low A and win a championship and throw really well. And the next year do the same thing. And it gives you confidence. So like, I know that I'm good enough for this level. So let's see what the next one is. Like, you just keep wanting to see if you're good enough for the next level. So that was the first time that like getting promoted happened for me. And, that was a wake up call for sure, but it meant a lot. I mean, fun little fact, I actually was at the All-Star game, doing the radio this year, and, I physically ran into Jim Murphy.
Oh, wow.
And I had not seen Jim since, I think 2010 or 11 when we played together in high A. So that was pretty crazy. He lives up here now. And
yeah,
and
he's selling real estate.
Oh, you're selling real estate. Yeah, yeah. Doing great.
Yeah, married.
Or getting married, I think. I think he's engaged. You know, he was always that guy. The guy who was just kind of staying single. and so, yeah, he was great to see him, but it was just crazy. Like, crazy thing. And he was like, I've been keeping up with it. So he was there too. And I remember having conversations with him because he was, you know, senior sign older from Washington. And he was just like, always like, dude, like you're really good. I remember him telling me that when I was 19, and that meant a lot to me. So I remember all that stuff. It was a blast.
I know you spent most of the time in the American League, but you played a couple of years with the Mets. I'm sure you ran into Dusty a couple of times.
Oh yeah.
When he was with the Phillies, of course.
Every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a bunch of great conversations that I asked him about, because I'm assuming Huck's like 28 now or something.
So I think Huck was five. Like he was five in 2019, six in 2019. He was the bat boy.
19 or 20. He's in college.
Yeah. No. He went to Charlotte first. I don't know if he's still there. He was a catcher for the University of Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he's still there, transferred somewhere. But, yes, he definitely played collegiate baseball last season. I don't know where he's going to be this year, but, yeah. So, yeah, he was. Yeah,
I saw Dusty and I saw Lundy, too, all the time.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was the bullpen coach for the Phillies, yeah. When you were here, you were 19 and then came back 20. You know, what did you learn at that, you know, at that age? What didn't you know then that you kind of wish you did?
I wish I would have known what carry was. That would have been nice. Cause I had it. The way I was pitching was I was learning to pitch kind of against myself. Mm-hmm. So that would have been nice, to have a better understanding of like why I have success and when it is. But yeah, it was like knowing, I'm glad I didn't know what type of journey it was going to be and how long it was going to take. I'm glad that's something I didn't know. That was ignorance was bliss in that situation.
Yeah.
But knowing more about that. And then just like, I wish, also that I would have, this is maybe a little bit more, relationships related, but like I wish I would have known or focused more on creating like a bunch of like really, because I don't keep track of a lot of guys, and I wish I would have made more of an effort to do that, because
it's not easy.
It's very hard to do, like, yeah. I don't blame myself that much, but like I wish that if I made a little bit more effort, I think that I'd be in a better place now. And now I'm trying to go back, and it's interesting, but that's what kind of happens when you have a year where you know you're going to retire. Like all this stuff kind of becomes the forefront, knowing, sure, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. So it's one of those hindsight things. I don't think there's a way to do it except for in hindsight. But other than that, like I'm pretty happy with how things I learned and how things went.
You had two different types of managers. They're both excellent, Dusty and Mark Parent. In the 2 years you were here, how do you kind of reflect back on the two of them in back-to-back seasons? Cause they both did a great job, but they definitely had kind of different styles.
Definitely different styles. Mark was definitely more old school, backup catcher for 13 years. That's kind of how you roll. I actually ran into him in the big leagues too, when he was with the White Sox for a short time, and mm-hmm. Nick was with them, and the boys were with them, saw them too. So, those were different crazy years, but you getting both ends of the spectrum a little bit was pretty awesome. And then I had Dusty in high A too, and then I had him in double A. So like he was we were going up together, and it's funny, then we were in the big leagues like for the same amount of time. So different paths, but we have our experience is very similar.
The Blue Claws added some players over the course of this season, as they remade their roster, adding players from Clearwater. And our last two guests are two of those players, Otto Kemp and Andrew Walling. Here's Kemp, though, from episode 78. And Otto had a fascinating baseball story. He ended up tearing his ACL twice in high school and into the early part of his collegiate career, and bounced back from that. He was played at a small school in California. Phillies signed him as a non-drafted free agent out of the 2022 class, and played very well for Clearwater, and then came up to the Blue Claws, and he was awesome. Got off to a bit of a slow start. It was a little unlucky. Hit about six balls hard. Was 0 for 16 or 17 with about six or seven balls at about 90 or 95 off the bat. And finally got a hit. It was a morning game, and he got a double to left center, looked up to the sky, and basically said, yeah, about time. And he ended up, he was great from there. Made a couple. He was tremendous defensively. He made arguably the biggest defensive play of the season for Jersey Shore's, a diving stop in the hole in the 11th inning of the game, the last game of the regular season up in Hudson Valley, that clinched a playoff spot for the Blue Claws. So a great young man, and a lot of fun to talk with him in episode 78. And he talks about his time with the Clearwater Threshers before his promotion, former Blue Claws manager Marty Malloy, and then a bit of his background as well. Here's Otto Kemp.
Yeah, Marty was the leader behind all of it. I mean,
it started during spring training. He knew with the group that we had going into Clearwater at the end of spring training, he had told us multiple times, he said, this team reminds me a lot of the winning team that I had a couple years back. We got a mix of a lot of old guys, a lot of young guys, and I think it's just a very good mixture of guys that I know can gel together. And he kept telling us throughout the season, you guys remind me of this team. Just keep playing your guys' game. And he held us to that standard. And I think everyone bought into that and everyone believed that we were going to be good. And I think that belief is just Marty's belief in us, because we could see that he believed in us and we can feel that. I think that just sparked all of it. So.
And then how have you guys kind of gelled quick? It seems like you made quick transitions. Obviously, you guys came in staggered, you know, a few here, a few there. But now I think it's eight or nine, I think nine now that Felix Reyes is here, position players. That were with Clearwater, and obviously, you know, six, seven, eight, nine pitchers or whatever it was, as well. How do you think you guys have gelled? And you touched on it before, but how is having so many from that one group helped the transition for everybody?
Yeah, I think it's a lot easier, especially just because you're coming into a new senior, you're coming into a new ballpark, new fans, new affiliate. It's everything is new. So having those familiar faces, that's what you find comfort in. And for me, that's what I found comfort in, and having all these guys to share the experience with, it makes you feel like you're not doing it alone. You're not the lone soldier, and there's guys that are in there with you, and they understand what you're going through, and they understand what the change feels like. So I think that's been the biggest part, is just having each other and already being close to the point where it's like we kind of know what to expect once we come in here. We got guys that have done it before us and that were on the same team as us. And they know what the adjustment looks like. And so that's been the biggest comfort, is we can all kind of confide in each other in that transition period. And we're all with each other, rooting for each other during that period too. So that's probably the biggest thing.
So go back a little over a year for you. You signed with the Phillies right around the 1st of August last year. How did you end up with the Phillies compared to some other teams? Had they been scouting you when you were in college?
Yeah, had a couple teams looking throughout college. Philly was actually the first team that had reached out to me. I think it was my junior year of college, post Northwoods for me. Zach Friedman, he was the one that he was a SoCal scout that had seen me play out in the Northwoods, and then he followed me out of Point Loma, but there were a couple other teams, and it was looking like I had no idea who I was going to go to during the draft, slash if I was going to go and sign, and ended up, I kind of have a little bit of an injury riddled past, a lot of surgeries under my belt, so that kind of came down to it, and a lot of people dropped off the table, but Philly was actually the only team by the end of the draft that was still in on me, so they took their shot, and now we're here. So all I really wanted was a shot to play pro ball. I wasn't looking for all the money and all that. So it was really just an opportunity. That's kind of how I saw it. And luckily, Philly was able to stick with me on this one and give me a shot. So,
what were some of the surgeries you've had to have?
Yeah, so my end of my junior year of college, I tore my ACL, didn't play that summer after my junior year. And then I rehabbed for about 6.5 months. And then my first practice back, I tore it again. So I didn't play my whole senior year. And then I came back Point Loma in San Diego. Point Loma Nazarene was the only, them and Concordia Irvine were the only two schools that offered me walk-on spots. So I ended up, I was kind of like, I don't know if I really want to play baseball anymore. It's a lot to come back from. ACLs take a lot out of you, mentally especially. And you just never know what they're going to feel like, especially considering college. The college season is kind of takes a toll on your body, and you don't know how your knees are going to hang out. So it was a big question mark for me. But I just felt a pull to go play and give it a shot again. And right when I got to Point Loma, I think all that fire of missing 2 years of baseball really, really sparked me. And that's kind of what inspired me to just work as hard as I possibly can in order to get to the next level. And so then my freshman year of college, I ended up starting, and I played like 12 games, and
on one random morning, I woke up and my arm was swollen, went to emergency room. Long story short, had a blood clot in my arm, had to get season ending surgery on that. I got my first rib removed and didn't play summer ball after that. So my freshman year was wiped. And then next year I tore my labrum sliding. That was COVID year. So yes. Tore my labrum in my throwing shoulder, rehabbed that. And then junior year came back and played, I played second base the next year, ended up playing summer ball. And then at the end of last year, when we were in the playoffs, I ended up breaking my hand. I broke my hammy. Played through that for a little while because we made the World Series my senior year of college, and ended up losing the championship. But got surgery after the postseason was over. And then I came in to – after I signed with Philly, I still had a couple weeks of rehab for that hammy. So – It's been a long journey with the body, and but we're here, and that's all that matters. So,
broken hammy is a tough one, obviously, for any hitter. That's the easiest one you've had.
Yeah, honestly, it is the easiest surgery I've had. So
you tore ACL junior year of high school. You said
junior year of high school. Yep.
What was the play?
It wasn't even during baseball. It was actually wakeboarding. We were up in the mountains and we were wakeboarding, and I jumped and landed flat, and my knee just buckled.
And did you know what happened right away?
I knew it right away. Yeah, it was the worst pain I've had in a while, and I knew right at that moment. I said baseball's gone for a little while. So
what was the second one?
That was a little bit hard, but the second one was just not being very smart during practice. It was my first practice back, and for some reason we decided to do rundowns, and I planned to tag somebody out during a rundown, and it just gave. And so then we just started that process all over again.
Back to the podcast in a second. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963, 732-370-5963, or richgreenlawns.com. And when shopping for appliances, electronics, and mattresses, you want a local hometown team that you can trust. That's PC Richard & Son. PC Richard & Son is a friendly and knowledgeable sales team, installations, and repair service you can trust, and the guaranteed lowest prices. So get to PC Richard & Son today. Shop smart. Shop local. Shop PC Richard & Son.
And lastly, Andrew Walling, episode 77. Andrew signed with the Phillies, like Kemp, in 2022. He pitched in the MLB Draft League, in fact, and he had been bounced around a few spots, was at Mississippi State most recently, but also was a teammate of Christian McGowan, who we heard from earlier, at Southeast Oklahoma State Junior College. He'd been at Oregon State as well. And Walling was from the Pacific Northwest, ended up down in the SEC, and then in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, pitching for the Crosscutters. So he was actually the latest player to go from Williamsport to Lakewood because, of course, remember, for many years, you had all kinds of guys do that. Played at low A, played at short season Williamsport, and then low A with the Blue Claws, but obviously that all went away now. Williamsport's in the MLB Draft League, and Walling talked about his experience there and said he wouldn't have been in affiliated baseball without the MLB Draft League.
The draft league was a great experience. I was super, super fortunate to have that opportunity to go out there and play. Met a bunch of great people. The manager is actually still managing, Jesse Litch. He was a huge help all summer. It was a great opportunity to be able to go play for a guy that had formerly played in the major leagues and kind of had an understanding of what it takes to at least get your foot in the door of affiliated baseball. And then going from there, it just allowed me to get that exposure that I really needed there at the end of the year.
Did you seek out the draft league? Did they come to you? How did you end up there?
I seeked out the draft league, actually, using my coaches at Mississippi State. They got me in contact with the league and they were helpful there, and then I kind of got the ball rolling with myself and was allowed to show up and get a chance, and then I got to stick around, so that was really cool.
So I know we talked about this the other day, but would you be here with the Blue Claws if not for the draft league?
I don't think so. I think that allowed me to show that there's still a reason to take a shot on me, and it allowed me to just kind of go have fun again, and I was super grateful for that.
You know, they had cut the draft itself. It was it used to be like 50 plus rounds. Then it went to 50. Then it was 40 for many years, but now it's only 20. So there are a lot of quality players that, you know, would move up high in systems, and some would make it to the big leagues that are no longer getting drafted. And, you know, those opportunities that you might get in, say, the Gulf Coast League or low A, you know, you'd have to get, because you were drafted, you now have to, you know, work a little harder and to get yourself signed. And it provides a great opportunity for a lot of guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it does. It's a big, obviously the game's changing when they change that draft and everything. So it's guys finding new ways to be able to get eyes on and someone to give them opportunity. So I think the draft league has been a huge help for that, for plenty of guys. I think they had even more guys get into affiliated baseball this year out of the draft league. So it's been a really successful thing, in my opinion.
What were your expectations going in? Like, I know they shared data, your data with you guys. Do they share it with the, and obviously they definitely share it with the parent organizations, but it's, you know, it's still a relatively new experience. What were your kind of expectations going in?
Yeah, I had no real expectation in the sense of how it should be exactly run or things along those lines. I was really just looking for an opportunity and a place to play baseball, but it didn't differ super or a whole lot from a lot of college baseball leagues, outside of the fact where they have that data that they can share and give people more concrete evidence of, hey, this is how this guy's doing. And it's a lot easier for those professional teams to scout you. And I think a lot of the coaches as well, because we had that guy who'd played, Jesse, who'd played in the bigs, they have that network. And that is something that was super helpful as well. Is these guys, you can go ask any sort of question and they usually have an answer, or they can lead you to someone that will give you an answer.
So where did the Phillies come in? Did you know they were scouting you, or did you just kind of get a call out of the blue one day?
I had no idea. I kind of got a call out of the blue one day. The area scout who had his eye on me when I was at Mississippi State, he interviewed me in the fall previously. So I had some rapport with him. I had that conversation with him, that pre-draft or that interview that previous year. And he called me up that summer after the draft league, and kind of the rest is history. But no, I wasn't expecting that at all. It was kind of out of the blue.
How was the integration into the Phillies way of doing things, and you know, the system you signed last year? You got a couple of games in late last summer, and then into the early part of the fall. How did the Phillies kind of weave you into the organization?
Yeah, it was pretty seamless. We showed up at post drafts, showed up for that first little mini camp. They got our feet wet a little bit, understood the complex, understood the Philly way, protecting the standard. And then they sent us and we started playing, but it wasn't that year. It was more, when we first showed up, it was more about getting your feet wet, go play. Here's professional baseball. Here's your first taste. And then this past season, spring training, first full season, has been pretty seamless as well. I'm very grateful to be a part of this organization. I think it's helped me improve a lot, and there's a lot of great personnel that they surround us with.
So that's a wrap on Hook, Line, and Splitter, our year in review episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. We really appreciate that as well. Those of you that made it through clips of all 8 interviews, just amazing, fantastic. Thank you so much. All the episodes are available on blueclaws.com/podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. So enjoy that. Thanks to all of our guests this year. In fact, since our last year in review episode, we heard from so many. Jared Carr from Adelaide, Australia. Matt Gelb of The Athletic. Couple of episodes with Blue Claws manager Greg Brodzinski. Anthony Kirion. Jomari Baylor. Nick Ward. Tommy McCollum. Chase Antle. Gunnar Mayer. Ryan McGee, the author of Welcome to the Circus of Baseball, which you should definitely read, a great book. The Most Interesting Man at Shoretown, Blue Claws groundskeeper Mitch Hillert, Orion Kirkring, Matt Russell, Matt Osterberg, Jordan Fowler, Travis Hergert, Phillies minor league pitching coordinator, Mitch Noonborn, Edwin Soto, Phillies assistant director of player development, Megan Flaherty, Blue Claws athletic trainer, Wesley Moore, Mark Jesse, Blue Claws strength and conditioning coach, Andrew Walling, Otto Kemp, Tony Grimm, on our season recap, Phillies minor league broadcasters in our minor league year in review, Trevor May, Preston Mattingly, Phillies assistant general manager, player development, Christian McGowan. And this, of course, our best of for 2023. I'm Greg Chamberisi. Thank you so much. We'll be back maybe before the new year with one more. More likely the first week of January, so be on the lookout for that. You're going to love this one. Luke Merton, the Phillies director of hitting. So that's coming up. Thanks so much. Have a happy, healthy, and safe new year. And enjoy the bowl games. And soon enough, baseball back in Shoretown. We hit 100 days. December 27th was 100 days until opening night. So that, looking forward to that as well, of course. And we'll see you soon. Thanks, everybody. Have a happy new year.